Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Brian Diaz here with you on a sloppy, sloppy Thursday. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend, as we like to say. Happy carnival season, everybody. Yeah, so the weather, it's kind of fun. Let's see, about 11 or 12 days ago, it was 39 degrees and then into the 20s overnight and cold and wet and unhappy. Then it's been slimy and 75 degrees and humid and foggy. And then now it's just kind of rainy. And man, I'd like a little bit of winter. But I think what we all know, and I'm not trying to be a doomsayer, but I think what we know, that with all this sort of 75 degree kind of weather right now, this hopefully does not set up to be something unhappy on Mardi Gras Day on February 28th. We don't want cold weather. It's been cold the last 2-3 years. We want nice weather. So let's just kind of hold out hope. There's my weather commentary for the show. We're moving on from there. A couple things that I want to mention. We've got a good show coming up for you today. Joining me very, very shortly is my good pal, Janice Sanders, who is here from Fantesca Winery, which is a fantastic winery in Napa Valley. And we're going to talk a lot about Fantesca wines. We're going to taste some of that stuff, kind of how they have a connection to New Orleans, which is an interesting story. And then we're also going to talk about some stuff in the wine industry, because Jen is a wine industry pro and we've known each other for a long time. So we're going to kind of get into some meat and potatoes that you might care about as far as things going on in that part of the world. And then in the second hour, I have also good friends. I always say, folks, here on the show, you know, I just have my friends on and I don't have very many friends, so I'm cycling back through friends. Jenna, it's her first time here on the show, but Matt Armato and Bo Cialino from Probably This Blog, this is their second time on the show, I think. So they're coming back around and they do a really cool blog. It's again called Probably This. You can find it probablythis.com, and they're also on Facebook and all that stuff. And it's sort of a lifestyle drink food blog. They do really cool recipes. They do really cool stuff. So we're going to talk a little bit about stuff as it relates to carnival season, maybe some things you want to have in your glass or on your plate now, and just other musings. We'll see where that goes. So they'll be joining us in the second hour. Couple things I want to mention, folks, real quick here. A couple events coming up that I think are worth noting. Le Petit Theater, our good friends over there, which is, of course, the Brennan Restaurant Group, the Dickie Brennan Restaurant Group with Tableau, right there at the corner of Chartis and St. Peter, right by Jackson Square and the newly renovated Le Petit Theater. If you're not familiar, it's a really beautiful building, and what they've done right there next to Tableau, right there by Sylvain on Chartis. They're putting on a production of Jelly's Last Jam. And Jelly's Last Jam is an absolute show that you should see. It's actually never been performed in New Orleans, which is kind of shocking to me. It's about Jelly Roll Morton. And Jelly Roll Morton was one of the most famous jazz musicians and raconteurs, really, of New Orleans music and culture going. And Jelly Roll started playing in the 19-teens and then kind of went on and recorded a little bit, I think, in the 20s. Most of his stuff is recorded in the 30s. There's a really great Smithsonian box set out there about Jelly Roll where it's just sort of him playing music and talking about it. And he was definitely a quality self-promotionalist, but he coined himself as the creator of jazz, which is obviously a little bit of a stretch. But the guy's roots go back to pre-recorded New Orleans music and pre-recorded jazz. And he is one of the few connections, friends, that we actually have to Buddy Bolden, who is really kind of seen almost mythologically as the true father and founder of jazz. Nothing exists of Buddy Bolden's recordings. There are some rumors of a few recordings of what are those things called? The metallic ones that you put around the cylinders. That's it. Cylinder recordings of his stuff, but nobody's ever found that. And Jelly Roll Morton, if you go listen to the Smithsonian stuff, actually talks about stories, talks about styles of music, and plays it while he talks about it. And he plays some Buddy Bolden stuff and things like that. He's an incredibly important musician. He started out playing piano like a lot of people did. We call them, as you probably know if you're listening here in New Orleans, we call them professors, or shorten that, we call them fess. And he was a fess, and he played like a lot of folks did at the brothels in Storyville, and really has these deep connections. Anyway, this show, Jelly's Last Jam, was a hit on Broadway. Actually, it might have even been in Harlem, where it originally started. And then it's now being performed, surprisingly, in New Orleans for the first time at Le Petit Theater. And that's going to start on, I believe, January 27th, and run for about a week and a half or so. Saturday evening performances at 7:30 and Sunday afternoons at 3. Shows about 2 hours and 50 minutes with a little bit of an intermission. And I like what they say here. Our friends at Le Petit Theater say it's recommended for those 13 and older. If you listen to Jelly Roll Morton, you listen to some, okay, the name Jelly Roll Morton, if you don't get it, go Google it. I'm not explaining it to you on the radio. I'm just saying. But so if you don't get Jelly Roll, there you go. It's a little body, and some of the music is a little body, but it's going to be a really fascinating performance. Liberty Theater is at 616 St. Peter Street. If you go to their website, which I believe is just simply Le Petit, L-E-P-E-T-I-T, then theater, another theater.com, you can find tickets. And that's absolutely going to be worth checking out. One other quick note, our friends at Bayou Burger, their original location is there on Bourbon Street. It's a mighty fine burger, actually. They're opening up a new location on 3226. That's it, 3226 Magazine Street, coming up here on January 19th. Hey, I think that's today. Wow. There you go. So you can go to Bayou Burger Uptown on Magazine Street. You don't have to go to the Bourbon one if you don't want to anymore. They make a fine burger there. They do a lot of cool stuff. It's the same restaurant group, friends, that does Kingfish, Broussard's, Bombay Club, Boulevard, and Tommy's as well. And yeah, good burger, kind of a sports bar oriented thing. So you can go watch a game, have a good burger. And they are putting a burger on the menu. I'm not sure if it's going to be on both locations. I know it'll be at the one on Magazine. And it's a Gleason burger. And it's they're supporting Team Gleason. So giving money away, of course, to ALS. And if you're interested in that for the ongoing future, as they say here, every Gleason burger bought, they'll donate $1 to Team Gleason for ALS research. So there is a good cause for you. Again, 3226 Magazine Street, Bayou Burger and Sports Company. Check that out. Good burger. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and we're going to be right back with my pal Jenna Sanders from Fantesca Winery. Come on back.
Give me a great big glass of wine. Give me a great big glass of wine.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Rum is the chosen spirit of Palace Cafe's Black Duck Bar and features an extensive rum collection from all over the world. Be sure to join us for happy hour Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m., with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine. Look forward to seeing you soon at Palace Cafe's new Black Duck Bar.
Drinking that wine is their delight. When they get drunk, they want to fuss and fight. Hooping and hollering and talk all night.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Happy Thursday. A little champion Jack Dupree, wine spodiote. Again, if you don't know who Jelly Roll Morton is and you don't get the term Jelly Roll, I'm not explaining it to you here on the show. I'm not going to say it's a family show because we talk about alcohol, but wine spodiote is also one of those ones. If you don't know, go Google it. Or talk to your parents about the birds and the bees or something like that. Anyway, I'm not going to explain that on the air here either. Pleased very much to be, here's a nice little setup and segue. Pleased to be joined with my good friend here, Jenna Sanders from Fantesca Winery here in Napa Valley. Jenna, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for that very interesting introduction.
It's an adult show. We talk about alcohol here on the show and other things. It is New Orleans. You're visiting New Orleans from Napa Valley. And yeah, I mean, you're staying at the Royal Sonesta on Bourbon Street. It's not like you haven't seen it in the past day.
It's true. So what Brian isn't telling everybody is that we already had lunch together today. We've basically moved in. We've started a relationship. There's going to be legal paperwork to separate us at the end of the day.
Yes, indeed.
And I thought we had gotten all of our wiggles out, but it looks like we're just going to keep going.
No, I think
great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is all true. So we've already had one of those. Again, if you don't know, we've had one of those New Orleans lunches. If you don't get it, Google it, because I'm not explaining that either. And yeah, we had some really lovely wines from Fantasca Winery. We went to Kenton's.
We did.
There at Uptown, which was really great. And the food was fantastic. So thank you so much for that.
You're so welcome. Thank you for joining us. And thank you to Kenton's as well. They put together the most beautiful pairing menu, showed off every single one of our wines. It was so much fun.
That was great. And they did really, really good job with the food, which was really, really cool. And one of the things that I mentioned at lunch is that, you know, it was a lunch for folks in the biz and in wine media and these sorts of things that came. And you sent me an email saying, yeah, you know, it's a lunch for NOLA influencers and you. And so I figured that I was just going to kind of show up, and I'm like, hey, man, free wine and a lunch. I'll be there.
I very much believe that I did say it that way, but I never intended it that way. You were always on the top of the invitation list, even if it didn't come across that way.
No, I really appreciate that. I have never been on top of anyone's invitation list, but that's really, really sweet of you. No, it was a great lunch and a really cool thing. And you and I, so people probably gather, we've known each other for a number of years, and we used to work together out in the wine business in California.
Absolutely. We first connected, gosh, about 5 years ago, I would say, over International Sauve Blanc Day when I was at St. Supri, which is probably the largest producer of Sauvignon Blanc in Napa Valley.
Right.
And you were managing an incredible industry organization for Sauvignon Blanc producers. And it's been a great business relationship and friendship ever since then.
Absolutely. That's really cool. And then we've kind of had this interesting opportunity to reconnect, because now you're with Fantasca Winery, which is also there in Napa. And we'll get into that in a second. But the folks that run the winery and own the winery this coming year are going to be the king and queen of Crew of Mid-City.
Absolutely. So Fantasca is this very small production luxury winery. Heidi Barrett's our winemaker. We make 3,000 cases of wine. When I accepted my position with Fantasca, I will honestly say, I thought, gosh, what are they going to have me do all day long? That's not a lot of wine to sell. And the first day, 9 o'clock in the morning, I've been an employee at Fantasca for 30 minutes. I sit down with Susan and Dwayne Hoff, our owners, and they say, we're the king and queen of the Crew of Mid-City this year. You're going to New Orleans for Mardi Gras. And I just felt like my entire world had changed. Like, how incredible of an opportunity for both Dwayne and Susan, for the winery, for all of us involved. And we get to fall in love with the city and be part of this really special tradition.
That's really cool. And I'm going to say this too, and you know this already about me. So, you know, this show, we do not stand on circumstance, and no souls are saved. So when you were working at St. Supri, you were doing the marketing for St. Supri, and we talked about International Sauve Blanc Day and stuff. And that is some pretty good-sized winery, as you said. And then I remember they asked you to run the wine club there. And it's like, you're only one human being. I'm only one woman. And there was just no way. And so now all of a sudden you find yourself at Fantasca, which I think is really cool. And you're here now to kick off with the, is it the ball of Crew of Mid-City? Is that this weekend? Is that why y'all are here? Or is it just kind of set up for stuff?
Sure. So what I've learned, and I'm not going to pretend to be an expert. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on anything. I'll do my best with Napa Valley Wine and Fantasca. But what I'm
You'll
learning,
well.
All right, thank you. What I'm learning is there are a lot of parties leading up to the actual week of Mardi Gras. We have a lot of celebrating to do along the way. So my first trip to New Orleans, where you and I got to meet up again, was for coronation, where Susan and Dwayne were officially crowned king and queen, pomp, circumstance, beautiful ceremony, ball, all of that. This weekend is the king and queen soiree. It's something that Susan and Dwayne are hosting. It's a chance for them to meet previous royal courts. It's a chance for them to meet captains of other crews. And it's also Susan's birthday.
Oh, hey, perfect.
Yeah,
that's good time. And we like to roll those celebrations up into one.
Absolutely. Which is kind of funny. We were talking about this earlier. They're rolling a really big celebration into Mardi Gras this year. So Susan and Dwayne were college sweethearts, and they're celebrating. They had hoped for a 30th wedding anniversary as king and queen, but they got 29th, and they're okay with it. Dwayne likes to say he's still on probation, so he doesn't know if he's going to make it to 30. So we're celebrating their 29th wedding anniversary in February.
When the court for the crew comes a call, and you accept it when it comes,
you
right?
You just say yes, absolutely.
So that's really fun. And then you get to come along for the ride. and you know, do some of the lunch stuff and do these things. And then I know you're going to be back for the parade and everything else. So you're coming back in right before Mardi Gras weekend, right?
Yeah. So one of the things about Fantesca is that unfortunately, you're going to hear some pretty cool stuff about our wines today, but it is not available for purchase around the United States. It's something that's only available to allocation members or people visiting our winery. And one of the things we try to do for our allocation members, and I think you and I are going to get into this a little bit later as it relates to direct sales in wineries, is we want to make sure that we provide them with extraordinary experiences throughout the United States. And so this, the whole Mardi Gras thing, the whole King and Queen of the Crew of Mid-City thing is a really incredible opportunity to bring all of our collectors into the fold. So we have what is virtually 5 days of events for all of our collectors. And we're starting with a dinner on Thursday night at Galatoire's, where we're going to do a beautiful four-course meal. We're going to have cocktails on the balcony. Our collectors are going to be able to throw beads on Bourbon Street, which not a lot of people who don't live here get to do.
Get that out of your system, too. Absolutely. Do it once and you're good.
Absolutely. I'm just hoping to survive, everybody. That's all I'm hoping for. And the next night, we'll have the supper dance and the ball for everybody to attend. Our collectors can come along as well. And we're planning some fun things to do when it's not necessarily like a formal sit-down situation, making sure they have lots of activities that they know about, making sure they know the ins and outs of the city. And then Sunday will be the parade, midday parade for the crew of Mid-City.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun.
It's going to be really great.
Now, do you get to ride in the parade or do you have to do stuff?
I have to do stuff. The thing about all of this is it looks like it isn't work, but I'm actually working this whole time.
I bet.
We smoke and mirrors, but really, truly, I got to earn a dollar. I got to make sure the winery looks good. I got to make sure Dwayne and Susan are content and are taken care of. So unfortunately, I will not be writing in the parade.
You deserve a bonus, and I'm gonna. If you need a reference on this,
thank you.
Go on record and tell them they can call me for what that's worth. I have no, like I said, I was not the NOLA influencer at the lunch. I was the other one. You're here. You know, you come here, and then you're kind of doing the handler thing. And you deserve a bonus for that, Jenna.
Well, thank you. Dwayne and Susan, I know you're on an airplane, but this is available via podcast tomorrow.
I will share it with them you'd like. Okay, so Dwayne and Susan, if you're listening, Jenna deserves a bonus. I'm going on record. She deserves a Mardi Gras bonus. You need a little spending cash when you're here for Mardi Gras.
I believe that.
I like that. Okay, we'll work that out with them.
Thank you.
All right, cool. So, you know, so tell us a little bit about Fantesca Winery, and we'll kind of go through the story. Let's give us the 3-minute version of the story, like you did at lunch.
Okay, perfect. How's that? Well, we timed it, so we know we can do it in 3 minutes.
And we got about that much left in this before we take a break, so it works out perfectly.
Beautiful. So we talked Susan Dwayne, college sweethearts, and Susan and Dwayne Hoff. Grew up in Minnesota, met in college, fell in love, got married when they graduated from college. Susan went to work for her father. Dwayne decided to make it on his own in the insurance business. Susan and her father were growing a chain of music stores that sold sheet music and instruments. And the chain grew. It was 4 stores. It was 10 stores. It was 20 stores. Dwayne realized at about store 20 that the insurance business might be not exactly what he thought it was going to be.
That's no fun.
Yeah, it's time.
Sheet music's more fun than the insurance business.
Sheet music is really where it's at. And at that same time, Susan and her father were looking at rebranding, changing the sales in the store. And they grew to electronics, stereo equipment, all of that. And as they were rebranding, Susan had, and looking at the way that they approached their business model. And when they were renaming the store, Susan hearkened back to what she had used when there was a sale in The Sound of Music. She would put a little yellow tag on a product and write Best Buy. And after 20 stores, Best Buy was born as something new. And Susan Dwayne, as well as Susan's father, Richard Scholes, built Best Buy into a Fortune 100 company. But there's a lot of hard work when you're building a Fortune 100 company. And I think all of us in professional careers realize it takes a toll on your marriage. It takes a toll on your family. Susan and Dwayne were flying across different parts of the country, always away from each other, never towards each other. And when they were looking at what they really wanted in life, they wanted a family. They wanted a business that they can share with their children as well. And they found a winery in Napa Valley that had been fully built. The grapes were planted. The winery was built. There was a beautiful estate on the other side of the property. It was everything that they could hope for. They just needed to make sure that there was good wine, too. So you have to taste the wine to know. And the moment that Dwayne did, he knew that this is the winery for them. And they have been out there as Napa Valley vintners ever since.
And I love what you said about this, too, because you talk about building a Fortune 500 company in this instance. And you think, well, that's a lot of hard work. And then you get to go run a winery because that's all Skittles and beer.
That's exactly it. People really have this misconception. I think it's true for New Orleans, too. I think people think of these different locations as places where you just have a good time. But you have to work really hard to earn that good time.
You do have to work really hard to earn that good time. I always used to give people advice out in California when I was working out there. And they would say, you know, I'm thinking about opening a winery and want to like pick my brain for thoughts. And I'd say, my thought for you is don't.
Yeah, absolutely. It's around the clock work. And you know, yep. It sounds great to have your house on the property, but it means that you never get to
leave. You never get to leave work. Exactly. Oh, and you're dealing with an agricultural project and sailing and everything. It isn't one of those lives where you actually get to just sit on the porch and drink the fruits of your labor. That's not how it works, friends.
At the end of the day, yes.
At the end of the day, right. Okay, so we're not making it sound, it's not all terrible.
Correct.
But it's not as fun as you think it is. Anyway, friends, what we're going to do here on the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition, we are going to take the bottom of the hour break. We are chatting with my good pal, Jenna Sanders from Fantesco Winery out there in the Napa Valley. We're going to talk a little bit more about the wine. I think we're going to talk a little bit more about the wine industry when we come back. So that should be a lot of fun. Friends, come on back.
Baby, do I feel high over me? Oh my. Do I feel high? Dry martini, jigger of gin. What a spell you've got me in, oh my. Do I feel high?
The French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot, flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, general manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucaray. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's grand dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon dining room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Noel Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Yeah, carnival season. Little Professor Longhair. It's always Professor Longhair season as far as I'm concerned. It's always wine season here as far as I'm concerned. That's what we're doing today. Chatting with my good pal Jenna Sanders from Fantesca Winery and parts of the wine country known. I'm going to say known in Napa. And we're drinking a little wine here and we're chatting. And we're tasting this really nice Chardonnay, Jenna. We were just sort of talking about it during the break. Nice balance on this. Little bit of wood, a little bit of lees contact. And what that means is we get our, see, we were talking about this at lunch today too. The French, they always use nicer words, don't they?
They really do. There's a big difference between batonnage and hitting something with a stick.
Yes. So batonnage is the method in which you go and you stir up the lees. Now, what is lees? It's dead yeast. Doesn't lees sound nicer than dead yeast? So what that does, friends, when you do batonnage on the lees or when you hit the dead lees with a stick, all right, how we'll go that way, what you really kind of add a little kind of creamy, toasty note to the wine. And that what it really does to me is it actually adds to the mouthfeel, so you get a nice mid-palate on the wine here with the Chardonnay. So you kind of don't get this fruit up front and acid at the end. And what a lot of people will do in quote unquote California style Chardonnays is they will mask that lack of mouthfeel by just dropping a ton of oak on it. And in this case, it's really nice and the crisp acidity really comes through on this one.
Absolutely. I was just telling Brian that this wine is really, really popular with our collectors. And I think it's because it's not what people expect a Chardonnay to be. There's a lot, if you're in the industry, I think you would taste this and say, okay, there's a lot of really classic Chardonnay characteristics in this glass. I get a lot of citrus, there's a little apple, there's a little pear, things that I would want from my Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. But you aren't getting the butteriness, you aren't getting the straight toasted oak, you aren't getting the butterscotch, which a lot of people tend to expect or just assume that that's what should be in a glass of Chardonnay. With Heidi, and you just touched on this as well, it's a really integrated wine. It's a very balanced wine. And it's just, it's perfect for food pairings. It's so food friendly. It's a great summer wine. And I mean, it's the only Chardonnay Heidi makes. So we're really lucky to have this as part of our portfolio.
Yeah. And Heidi Barrett's a very noted winemaker in Napa. And she does consulting winemaking and winemaking for a handful of different outfits out there. So I didn't realize that this was the only Chardonnay that she makes. That's kind of interesting.
It really is. Heidi is very well known. I keep saying Heidi. We're just best friends, Heidi and I. Heidi Barrett is very well known.
Have you been in the helicopter?
I haven't been in the helicopter.
She has a helicopter. All right. That's how cool she is. All right. Go on. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Where was I?
You and Heidi are best friends. And I haven't been given a ride in the helicopter yet is where you were. And then she makes a Chardonnay.
Pull it all back together again. Oh, my goodness.
She doesn't drink the Chardonnay while she's flying the helicopter, though.
No, she doesn't. We're very careful about that in Napa Valley, as everyone should be around the United States. That's my public service announcement for this radio show.
Yes, don't drink in a helicopter.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm also going to have to ask you to ask me another question because I have no idea where we started now that we are here with drinking in helicopter.
Not a problem.
Flying.
So we talked about the Chardonnay. And it's really nice. And you mentioned like good sort of summer wine. And one of the things here, I think with the nice acid structure and stuff like that, this is going to be a really good food wine any time of year here. You know, we do the shellfish thing here all year round. Actually, really, this is a nice wine with oysters raw on the half shell or charbroiled, frankly, would go great.
Absolutely.
Little lemon zest and a little brie on there, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing that pretty well. Yeah, so really neat. So you know what? While we're talking about some stuff, and I'm going to kind of intertwined topics. And you've worked in the wine industry for a while, and you've been around it for a long time, kind of like me out there in California. And you guys, so as you said, you're a smaller winery, and you don't distribute in the classical sense here in Louisiana. So you either have to come to the winery to buy the wines, or you have to be a collector, which I'm going to use the term that I understand. I think that means wine club member, right?
Sure. If you want to call it.
I like your marketing speak. You want to be a collector. That's really totally. That's raising the game there a little bit.
It's like batonnage or hitting something with a stick. Do you want to be my wine club member? Or do you want to be my collector?
I think I want to be. Yeah, I like it. I've learned something new here today. So we're going to go with batonnage and collector. But people here in Louisiana can actually join the wine club, right?
Absolutely. The collector lists are available to anyone who's interested.
Sorry, collector.
Are available to anyone who's interested in the wine. We make 4 wines in our portfolio, and there are options to either do 6 bottles a year or 12 bottles a year for all of the wines except for our estate Cabernet. There's a limitation on the estate Cabernet because it comes from our property, and we have only 10 acres planted on our property, which means we have a very the wine production is going to be capped at what 10 acres can produce. So mm-hmm. That's available for 3 bottles for anyone who's interested, and all you have to do is call the winery.
Okay. That's cool. And you know, so one of the topics that has come out recently, and you and I were talking about this a little bit earlier at lunch and such, is that all these sort of end of the year reports from 2016 have come out, and direct to consumer is a really important part of the wine industry, especially for smaller wineries and boutique wineries, because it's hard to get a distributor to pick up your wine, actually sell it right, tell a story right, get you shelf space, get you on a wine list. And we see that direct to consumer thing growing. So you guys, I mean, really that is your model. I mean, direct to consumer coming into the tasting room or being a collector and being able to come in and buy the wines off the list that way. It's critical and obviously a cornerstone to your business plan.
Absolutely. And it was a conscious decision from Dwayne and Susan's sales history with Best Buy. Best Buy is built on a sales discounted model, and that was the cornerstone to Best Buy's success. But when it came to winemaking, Dwayne and Susan had the choice where they could own a winery and operate on a discount model and really make a lot of wine and put it into distribution, have it cover the United States. It's absolutely a choice they could have made, but they had done that. They had done that with Best Buy. And so they were ready to really focus, keep a limited production on the wines that they make and make it about the experience at the winery and taking that experience back home.
Mm-hmm.
And we had talked about the food friendliness of the Chardonnay. In Napa, we drink wine all day long. I love what my sister says about it. She says, anywhere else in the world, it's a problem. In Napa, it's a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So we really do. We don't
you fit in great here.
I know. There's a reason I love this city. So in Napa, we don't need to eat a meal with wine. We'll just have a glass of wine. I have tasted wine at 9 a.m. But the rest of the United States does not drink wine this way. So it's really important for all of these wines to be able to fit into people's lifestyle. And I think that's why it's so important to have the balance and the integration in all of these glasses so that you can enjoy your meal without the wine overpowering with mm-hmm. what you have mm-hmm. on the table.
And that's a really big deal here, Jenna, is that I think a good example, and I know you guys, it's not in the program, but like people talk about rosé or even like Chardonnay being a seasonal wine.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, like, you know, we drink rosé year round here in New Orleans because it goes with the food. Apparently in the wintertime, it's 75 degrees and humid. So it's great rosé weather. And you know, and there is that lifestyle of wine and cocktails and these sorts of things. And we do our Friday lunches and all that kind of stuff. And so having this accessible to you, both from a food perspective, but well as a sipping perspective, is something I think we kind of share in common with wine country here. It's embedded in the culture.
Absolutely. Which is why the city is so, I am so happy every time I get to come here for business. There's so many similarities between Napa Valley and New Orleans that I just never would have imagined. And I'm going to just take a wild turn left if you don't mind. But this is actually exactly why Dwayne and Susan fell in love with New Orleans as well, and really brings them back into the whole Mardi Gras fold. Having come from Minnesota, when they came to New Orleans for the first time to experience Mardi Gras, this was the most celebratory, spirited city that they had encountered. And they just fell in love with the alcohol culture, the drink culture, as well as the spirit of the people here on the street.
And it's all integrated.
It's all integrated. And it's the same for Napa Valley. People really love where they are. They really cherish their favorite restaurants, their favorite wineries, just like you guys really cherish your favorite restaurants, your favorite bars, your favorite cocktails.
Yep.
There's all of that. And there's so many similarities between Napa Valley and New Orleans that it's just a really natural fit to bring this wine over here, get to do these amazing wine lunches, wine dinners, whatever it is we get to do.
You know, there's a really famous quote, Jen, and you may, this, if you're from New Orleans or are here, you know this quote. If you're listening on the podcast, maybe you don't or whatever. But there's a very famous Tennessee Williams quote, and he says, in the United States, there are three cities, San Francisco, New York, and New Orleans, and everything else is Cleveland. And so we're going to kind of group Napa Valley in with San Francisco over there because that kind of fits that vibe in the New York and New Orleans. And so I'm kind of saying, and I'm going to be careful here too because my mom's family is from Minnesota, but we're going to group that in with Cleveland.
It's very different. It is. It's a very different alcohol culture. And, you know, talking about direct-to-consumer sales versus distribution, what you learn is there's a very, very different wine culture in every single part of the United States and very different legislation in all of the different parts of the United States. I remember the first time I was in Santa Fe in New Mexico, and I was at a grocery store on a Sunday, and they had ropes on the alcohol aisle. And I had just never in my life known that you weren't allowed to buy alcohol any day of the week, any time of the week. Because in California, you can.
Isn't that the weirdest thing? And here you can, and it doesn't, like, you can do it all night.
Yeah.
Yeah, there isn't even really the 2 o'clock in the morning thing here either. And that's, yeah, I had the same thing happen to me in Florida where people looked at me like I was the devil at 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning when I first moved there, walked up with a 12er, and they're like, you can't buy this. I'm like, well, why? It was right there on the shelf, and I can't.
Yeah. There is a very weird feeling of shame when you're the only person who wants to buy a 12-pack on a Sunday. Am I the only one who wants to drink beer on a Sunday?
Exactly. Well, here's what we're going to do, friends. We're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. We're going to be back. We're going to chat a little bit more with Jenna Sanders. We're going to taste some more wine. We're going to talk about Fantesca and some other stuff. Come on back.
Hey ladies, are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello wine. Cheers.
The Black Duck Bar is now open on the second floor of Dickie Brennan's Palace Cafe. Named in honor of the famous Black Duck Rum Runner, the bar features an extensive rum collection. Also noted for its small plates and charcuterie, the Black Duck Bar is sure to please. Join us for happy hour 4 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and try half-price draft beer, wine on tap, or a small plate. Stop by Palace Cafe at 605 Canal Street and try a delicious rum cocktail at the new Black Duck Bar.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Happy Thursday, everybody. Happy Carnival. Yeah, a little rebirth. Nothing wrong with a little rebirth here on a Thursday afternoon, almost 4 o'clock. We're drinking wine. That's what we do here on the show. Chatting with Jenna Sanders here from Fantesca Winery out there in Napa Valley. And our next guests, Matt Armato and Bo Cialino, are also here from probably this. I think they knew that there was probably some wine around, so they showed up a little bit early. Is that a fair guess, guys? I know you don't have a mic. They're nodding. So we have a party going on here in the studio. So Jenna, now what we're doing is we are tasting this lovely Pinot Noir. And it's very, very nice.
Well, thank you. I think so, too. We are. And, you know, we've talked a lot about Napa Valley. And the kind of funny thing in talking about Napa Valley is that neither of the wines that we've tasted on air so far are from Napa Valley.
Yeah, right. Okay.
We source our grapes for both the Chardonnay and the Pinot Noir from the Russian River Valley. We work with several different vineyards there, primarily the Bacio Gallupi vineyards. And they are...
Can you spell that?
I actually can.
You don't have to.
Don't challenge an Italian on air to an Italian spelling competition. Okay, fair enough. I told you my vintner story. Italian blood in the wine industry since the 1800s. You
Nice. And I like that backstory. We'll save that for next time.
Absolutely.
But that's the Russian River Valley there in Sonoma.
Yes. So all of these grapes come from the Russian River Valley. We've talked a lot about Heidi Barrett on this show. Heidi Barrett does not make this wine. This wine is actually a project for Tony Urquidy, who is a very talented winemaker in Napa Valley. Very interesting man. And I love this wine because if you know Tony, this is an incredible reflection of Tony's personality. This wine is not shy. It's not a quiet wine. This wine...
You mentioned he's from Boston, so that makes sense.
Bostonian through and through. And this wine is very, much like the Chardonnay, it's true to its varietal characteristics. You're going to get red fruit, you're going to get a little smoke, a little spice, but there's so much going on in the glass. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it's a bold Pinot Noir. There are some Pinot Noirs that you drink and they might feel a little bit watery almost. There's just not as much flavor in the glass. There's a lot going on in
the
glass.
You know, it's absolutely, but it's not overwrought, which I think a lot of people do with Pinot where they... you said this at lunch, and I think it's very true. People try and make it like a Cabernet, or I would even argue like a Zinfandel or something, where they put way too much wood on it. They overripen the grape, which does not, Pinot needs some acid. They screw that up. And then they you know, when they overripen it, the alcohol gets too high, and then they try and mask it by putting more wood on it, and that really doesn't work. It is still a delicate grape. So this is bold, and it's not shy, as you said, but there's some nice fruit structure in this, and there's still a nice acid finish on this wine, and so it's really the way it's supposed to be.
Absolutely, and when we talk about acid finish on these wines and the kind of nuances of these wines, it goes back to the whole food thing all over again. You do need a little acid for your food pairing. You don't want a wine that's so in your face that it's going to overpower anything that you have plated in front of you. So here we go with another really beautifully balanced wine that you can have at the dinner table anytime.
Yeah, and today, I mean, and this was, I was thinking of a good pairing, and the one that we had at Kenton's today was perfect with this. It was drum, and it kind of had a seared butter sauce on it with black-eyed peas.
Absolutely.
And that was really very, very nice with this because they a little bit of a meatier fish, and the butter added some weight to the fish mm-hmm. that actually stood up to this slightly bolder Pinot, we'll put it that way. I think it was a nice pairing.
It really was. It was really beautiful. And I was surprised by how much butter was in that dish, but it worked so well with this wine. And I think because the acidity can cut through the butter in the dish, it was perfect together.
I was really afraid that the way that dish was with the butter that I was going to spill it on my shirt, and that was not going to come out of my shirt. So I was like really careful to not spill on my shirt. And my lovely wife is sitting here, as she does sometimes, and she knows I spill on my shirt. I didn't spill on my shirt, babe.
Thanks for being presentable at lunch today.
I did my best. I did have shorts on. Anyway. So this is, but really, really nice. And I do like this one. And let's do this. I don't want to make anybody chug, but let's do the next. So Napa's cab country. Okay. And so you guys have two really nice cabs. We taste these side by side at lunch, but let's talk a little bit about those. So you have an estate cab and then you have a non-estate cab, correct?
Correct. We actually call the non-estate cab a Napa Valley red wine so that Heidi Barrett has some freedom in what she puts in the bottle. Predominantly, it's going to be Cabernet Sauvignon. Cabernet is king in Napa Valley. When you were alluding to the Pinot Noir being a classic Pinot Noir and not something else, that's really a choice in making a Pinot Noir that does not taste like Cabernet, especially when you're in Napa Valley. But the All Great Things and the Estate Cabernet Sauvignon are two really beautiful and very different examples of what you can do with Cabernet in Napa Valley. So Heidi Barrett is very well known for her blending skills. All Great Things brings her blending skills really into sharp focus. She is able to source the most spectacular grapes coming from the most spectacular vineyards throughout Napa Valley for each vintage. It's going to be red Bordeaux varietals. So this one we had talked earlier, there's a little Cabernet Franc. There can be Merlot, Petit Verdot, and Malbec. But it's just going to depend vintage to vintage and what's coming out of Napa Valley. What happens with the All Great Things is that it's just a little bit earthier. There's some dusty characteristics to this. There's a little bit more herbaceousness to this wine than you get with the Estate Cabernet. And it's just two very different winemaking styles. With the Estate Cabernet Sauvignon, it's going to be as close to 100% Cabernet that you can get. And it's going to be coming from grapes from our property. So it's an expression of Spring Mountain. And it's an expression of the vineyards around the winery itself. Whereas the All Great Things is really a story about that vintage and about all of the different things going on around the valley.
You know, and I really like this one. And I like what you're saying about what Heidi does with the program in that sort of looking around for what, you know, all bets are off of where something's going to come from. So sort of saying, you know, the cab's looking real good this year. Cab's looking kind of this way this year. I'm feeling really good on the Merlot, feeling really good on the Cab Franc, whatever. And I'm guessing that that's where we were talking about this at lunch too. I'm guessing that's where I was, is Cab and Cab Franc and Merlot.
Yes.
In addition on this guy. And as you said, a little bit dustier. The thing I like about it too, again, not overwrought, not overdone. The acidity is really nice on this. The acidity is, and this is a 2012, correct. Is that right? Which is a great year. And the thing I think it's interesting about it too is that, you know, fruit's bright up front. There's a little bit of tart acid on this. This is easily something very nice to drink right now. This is actually something that'll quite easily go for 10, 15 years without a doubt.
Absolutely. These wines are meant to age. We want these wines in your cellar. There are several different kinds of
wine. Can I have some in my cellar? You'll send me some? Okay, go on.
I mean, this bottle's going to be finished by the end of this, so I'm going to have to send you something out. But there are a lot of different philosophies. You can make wine to drink today, or you can make wine to drink to age. And I think this works in both situations. Mm-hmm. But really, Duane and Susan's entire wine drinking philosophy is that wine is part of life's celebrations. You don't want to be that person who passes away with a cellar full of wine that you didn't share on all of those special occasions. So just pull the wine out and have a really good time.
Well, and you know, and Jenna, that's a great point. And you know how it is too, where I think sometimes, and I can sometimes be guilty of this, where you're thinking, okay, it's that 10-year-old bottle. I ain't gonna open that one yet. I gotta wait. And then you go 15 years and then you open it up and you go, I should have opened it 5 years ago.
Absolutely. That has happened so many times in my life where you feel you have the most special occasion. You're gonna pull out that very special bottle. Well, unless you have a really great temperature regulated cellar, you need to be careful with how long you hold on to this bottle.
That's right. Take a look at the alcohol level and all that. Just out of curiosity, what is the alcohol level on this guy?
Oh, that's a great question that I'm gonna have to actually look at the bottle for. It's 14.4%.
Yeah. So
typical for Napa Valley.
Yeah, very typical for a cab, but not, again, not overdone, but not something that is, you need to let it lay down for 30 years to express itself.
No.
Not at 14.4.
Absolutely. And even today, we didn't decant. We just popped the cork on this and poured it in a glass. And I think it's tasting really beautifully.
Yeah, and we had oh my God, what was the beef dish that we had today at lunch? It was beef tenderloin, I think, and a beautiful sauce on that. And it was really gorgeous. And we did that side by side with this one. And then we're going to taste the next one after we come back from the break. So I'm going to get, I know you have a, because you're working here while you're in New Orleans, these people, again, play them the podcast. Wayne, Susan, are you listening? Jenna deserves a raise and a bonus for being here. It's really hard work that we're putting her through here, lunch at Kenton's and drinking on the show. But anyway, you are working and we're going to come back and taste a little bit. We're going to bring Bo and Matt from probably this into the conversation because we're having a party here in the studio. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a little bit of a break here on the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition, and we're going to come back, taste a little bit more Cabernet. And as I mentioned, Matt and Bo are here from probably this. We're going to talk about their wonderful blog, which, do you guys describe like a lifestyle blog, food and drink lifestyle kind of thing? And it's blowing up right now. If you don't know it, you probably should. So we're going to talk to those guys, but we're going to overlap here. We're going to do an all-star team thing here with Matt, Bo, and Jenna. BJ working the board as he always does. My lovely wife, Sylvia, is sitting here. Brian here on the show with you. Come on back for hour number two of the NOLA Drinks Show.
To shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to over-oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc. A great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Tim McNally, welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to hour number two of the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Happy Thursday, everybody. Happy unofficial start of the weekend. You know, I was saying during the break, friends, that we actually, if you do want to call in and you have a question, it's 504-556-9696. We had one caller today, and they called in, and they wanted to know what the theme music was. Cool. Probably don't care about the topic material. We're happy to tell you what the theme music is. Anything on the playlist, I'm happy to talk to you about that too. Love it. Anyway, we're sitting here chatting with my good friend Janice Sanders from Fantesca Winery, and also be very pleased to be joined by my other good friends Bo Cialino and Matt Armato from Probably This. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks so much
for having us again.
Yeah,
surprised you invited us back.
Yeah, no, you acquitted yourself nicely the first time, and we figured you didn't really, you know, trip over yourself or anything, so you can come back. And as I was saying at the beginning of the show, I generally have my friends on, and then I've run out of friends, so I bring my friends back on the show. Jenna's the first time, so that's kind of like I'm now mining for new friends. But no, we've been friends for a while, too. But we're having a really good time, and we're going to get to the Probably This blog, which you guys are doing, which is fantastic. And it's great stuff that you're doing. And right now, what's going on? Well, speaking of fantastic, we're tasting wines from Fantastic. I wasn't going to make that joke.
You already did. This is the second time, actually.
I did.
Counting.
Did I say that earlier?
In the first hour, yeah.
No, I didn't know. I made that alliteration. It wasn't intentional the first time. This time, I totally went for cheap. So it was. The alliteration was incredibly intentional this time. Jenna, what we're doing is we're tasting the second Cabernet here, and we've brought Matt and Bo up to speed on the wines, I think, are pretty close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're there.
We're caught up.
You guys are caught up. Good. I know you guys are professionals, so we asked you to power taste. Catch up. Don't get lapped. We're tasting the Napa Valley. This is the estate.
Absolutely. First, I'm going to say cheers to everybody in this room because we've done an excellent job at catching up on all four wines. Cheers, we are here together now. Cheers.
Yep.
Thank you for
drinking
with us today.
We can clean glasses. We do that here.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So the final wine that we're tasting today is really what Napa Valley is known for, what Napa Valley is expected to produce. This is your big, bold, fruit-forward Napa Valley Cabernet Sauvignon. This is coming from Spring Mountain. The vineyards on our property have a tremendous diversity in sun exposure. When we say Spring Mountain, we mean it. It's a mountain. So lots of diversity in elevation, slopes, soil, all of those different things. Creates a really complex wine, even though it's as close to 100% Cabernet Sauvignon as we can do. What I love about this wine is the fruit forwardness of this. We had talked about the All Great Things before we tasted this wine. All Great Things is there's a lot of fruit in the glass, but there's a lot of other kind of more earthy characteristics. This one is Napa Valley Estate Cabernet Sauvignon. This is going to be big, bold, dark fruit, richness, beautiful. I would say the tannins aren't super pronounced on this wine. They're actually fairly soft for a Cabernet Sauvignon, which makes it nice and drinkable now. Although, as we were talking about earlier, all of these wines can age for a really long time.
Yeah, this one, I really like it because, again, it's a 13, which is another fine year. We've had a run of very good years from 12, 13, 14, really 15, probably even 16. But these were spectacular years. Some of the 13s, I think, that I've tasted out of Napa, the tannins can still be a little green.
Yes.
And the tannins aren't green here. As you said, they're nice and they're soft. And when you mentioned that, you know, it's big and bold and so on and so forth for a Cabernet, I want to make sure that we're being clear here that this is, again, not overwrought. There's not too much wood on it. It's not too jacked in alcohol. It's actually, you know, the acid still does come through on the wine, which is something that we want.
Absolutely. The focus for the entire winemaking program at Fantesca is about balance. There's going to be really healthy acidity in every single bottle that we make, and it comes back to food and wine. In Napa, we drink wine all the time. We don't need food with it. We recognize the rest of the world is not the same as we are, and everybody else wants to have a glass of wine with a meal rather than at 9 a.m. in a business meeting. So
that's, again, why you fit in here, because we do here.
It's true. So just in case you didn't know, if you have a business meeting after 10 o'clock in the morning in Napa, someone will pour you a glass of wine. 10 exactly. o'clock is really the, 9 is a little early. You might get coffee at 9 a.m., but 10 o'clock and later, we are going to pour you a glass of wine when you sit down.
Yep, and that's exactly why it all fits in here, is because we have lunches that start at 11 or 12 o'clock on a weekday in New Orleans, and you kind of don't go back to the office.
Yeah. I'm going to touch on one thing you said about the vintage. So 2012 is really the first vintage in Napa Valley where wine writers started saying, this is an incredible vintage. This is a vintage like we haven't seen before.
After 2007.
Yes.
Yep.
We had to survive 2011. There was a little slump. 2012, yep. People are excited again. 2013, our winemaker calls 2013 epic. Mm-hmm. He says 2013 is the kind of vintage where you don't even really need to have a lot of skills as a winemaker. You can just step back, put the grapes in a barrel, and call it a day, because the quality of the growing conditions that year were as exceptional as they could possibly be.
Yeah, and then that's it. Stay out of the way of the wine, and you don't need to manipulate. And I think we have a lot of people, when you look at getting into the wine industry, if you got into the wine industry in the early 2000s, we had a pretty good run. 2007 was a banner year, talking about California. And then all of a sudden, 9 rolled around, 10 rolled around, 11 rolled around, and people were like, you know, they thought they were on easy street. And then you actually had to be a good winemaker to figure things out. You also had to be a good winemaker to figure out that this is a banner vintage, so just don't screw it up, dude. I like to say, you got the keys to the car, don't crash the car.
That's
right,
exactly
pretty
it.
Simple. Well, and Matt and Bo, what are you guys thinking about the cab that we're on right now? What do you think? Did you guys have this one?
We're drinking the same thing. I mean, it's really incredible. I don't really have the vocabulary to like keep up with you all.
Incredible works well.
It's delicious.
Yeah, I always tell myself that I'm not really as much for the fruit forward big cabs from California that have gotten so big. And then I have one like this and I'm like, I'm an idiot, because it's just like so that when they're done right, they're so good. I think that I was ruined during college when I was drinking all of like the in quotes fruit forward that just meant like, you know.
Yeah, fruit bomb, too much wood, too much alcohol.
Yeah. But this is done so beautifully and so balanced, it's really incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to take credit for it because I'm the one who's here right now. So thank you. Thank you
both.
Yeah,
thank you for making it with your own hands.
You are so very welcome. I hadn't yet been employed at Fantesca at the time of this vintage, but it was a lot. It was a labor of love.
I can tell.
And they knew you were coming. You were at St. Supreme. They said, this girl's going to shepherd the 2013 in when it comes out.
We need her for this epic vintage.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. This is really, really good stuff. So again, if people want to, and we'll do this, tell people, Jenna, where they can find Fantesca Winery online if they want to come see you at the tasting room. Because I know you're collectors at the wine club, so I'm guessing, is it by appointment only, or do y'all have regular tasting room hours?
We are by appointment only. You can visit us on fantesca.com. It might sound complicated. It's exactly what it sounds like, fantesca.com, and give us a call. All of the information is on there. We're on every social media channel you can imagine, so you can find us online in a lot of great places. And then when you're in Napa Valley, visit us. We're going to show you a really good time and pour some great wine for you.
That's cool. And you can become a Fantesca collector. You got to call the winery to do that, though, right?
Yes, you do. We do not take online wine orders, but we're happy to talk to you on the phone or host you at the winery.
Who answers the phone?
Everyone. When you have 7 employees, everyone answers.
Everyone. I like that. It's a small winery operation. That's kind of what I was getting at, is that everybody, all hands on deck, mm-hmm. all the time. And that's really the way it should be, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to work with a really small team, all dedicated to a very common pursuit. It's fantastic.
Yeah, cool. I'm glad you are where you are, by the way.
Thank you. I really enjoy it, too.
Yeah, you should be. And that's really cool. I think you're in you're in a happier place, I think.
I would say I feel happier. I'm glad you noticed I'm happier.
Yeah, I did. I do. Friends, Jenna Sanders from Fantesca Winery out there in Napa. They're going to be back here with the crew of Mid-City coming up right before, you know, Mardi Gras weekend, all that good stuff. Jenna, thanks so much for lunch today. Thanks for bringing the wines in. Always a pleasure to see you, my friend.
You are so welcome. Thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely,
today.
Absolutely. And Jenna's got to scoot off and go work. Bonus. Are you guys listening? Bonus. And we're going to come back here after this little bit of break, and we're going to talk with Bo and Matt from Probably This. Come on back.
Iron tub ice down full of Falstaff brew. Black head of sun, Bobby Charles cold blue.
Springtime in New Orleans is beckoning us back on our front porches, favorite patio bars, and restaurants. Dickie Brennan's Tableau offers some of the best outdoor dining in the French Quarter. Soak in the beautiful weather on the balcony overlooking Jackson Square or by the whispering fountain in the cozy courtyard. Tableau also offers an amazing happy hour from 2 to 6 p.m. every day of the week, offering half-price beer and wine on tap, $5 classic cocktails, and discounted small plates. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Tutima is a big fine thing. Who's on this? Swing that thing. Tutima can shake that thing. Who's on this? Swing that thing. Tutima can shake that
thing. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show. NOLA Drinks Edition. Brian Diaz here with you. Little Baby Dodds Trio. Little Danny Barker. We just did the whole Danny Barker birthday thing this past weekend. We were talking about Jelly Roll Morton at the top of the show with Jelly's Last Jam, the production coming at the end of the month to Le Petit Theater. If you don't know Jelly Roll Morton, you should. If you don't know Danny Barker, you should. If you don't know the Baby Dodds Trio, you should. You can call into the show. Apparently, people call into the show just to know what music we play. 504-556-9696. We'll answer those questions. We'll field any questions. You want to talk about life? You want to talk about metaphysics? I'm not sure what that means, but we'll talk about whatever. What I'd rather talk about is with my good friends here, Matt and Bo from Probably This. Let's talk about Probably This. Gentlemen, again, thank you for being here.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks good. Again for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was really cool to just kind of easy on into the show here with a little bit of wine. I think that turned out all right.
Yeah, that was great.
Absolutely. I wish everywhere we went, there was just someone with an open bottle of Cabernet waiting for us.
Yeah.
thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. I would like to say that I'm sort of like that Johnny Appleseed, Johnny like Cabernet seed guy that is that guy, but I'm not. We'll thank Jenna who just left, but she had to go do a conference call. You guys, thanks for being here today. And you guys do a really cool blog, and we were talking about it just very briefly before, and I guess I kind of called it a lifestyle blog. I guess that's fair, right?
Yeah, lifestyle pretty much describes it. It's because it's as broad as I think it is. We cover all things from food and cocktails. Lately, we've been doing interiors, like interior design in our home, and I don't know, a little. We've done like fashion a little bit, not really that
yeah,
much.
Yeah, we called it Probably This because we just kind of wanted to document our lives, and whatever we're doing, it's kind of the answer to what are you doing, which is probably this. So for a while we had like an 8 month long like baked goods and cocktail, you know, real banger that's like all we were doing, and tons of original recipes. It was so much fun, and now we're focusing on our home. So we've had a lot of fun getting together all of the different rooms in our dining room and our bedroom and our living room together and kind of posting our progress pics from all of those interior projects.
Yeah, that's cool. And so you guys we'll start kind of here from the beginning. You do photography and you do food photography, I know, right? And you did marketing work before, correct? Is that correct? Or
I went to Loyola for marketing.
Yeah.
I didn't quite do the work part. I just kind of did the learn part.
Right.
I can tell you how to market, I think.
You passed your classes?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Nice work.
Yeah, I graduated.
and then from there, so it was photography. Is that what you kind of got into?
Yeah, I was doing photography for a little bit. I had a few different jobs. I was doing restaurants as well. I've been in restaurants for a while, which is what got me into cocktail scene, just as Matt did. But we've been doing the blog full time now for about a year. So
yeah, and it's neat. I kind of want to get, because I've known both of y'all before you started the blog, and and I know, you know, Matt, you started out working, well, from when I knew you, I know you probably did stuff before that. You didn't come into existence at that time. So you were working at Sylvain, there, the LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group.
Yes.
Stuff. And yeah.
So I started working at Sylvain when I was in college, I guess. Thanks. I studied English with a concentration in like digital media, which involved a lot of blogging, like writing for blog formats and stuff like that, learning how to start that kind of stuff. Started working at Sylvain while I was in college just as a host, but then I got really interested in the restaurant business. So that was I had worked in restaurants before, but that was the first serious restaurant that I got a job at. And I worked for that company for, I guess, about 4 years at Sylvain as a host and then a server. Moved over to Mobar, where I was a bartender, and then actually opened up a cabin as the I don't really know what it was.
You're one of the managers, right? One of the floor managers, yeah. Yeah, that's right. And I forgot that you did the stint over at Mobar behind the bar.
Yes.
And I mean, I'm guessing that was an important part of the education here that we're talking about.
Absolutely. I had spent a lot of time at home reading about cocktails and kind of like building my own home bar. But
not drinking them, right? Just reading about them?
I mean, drinking them too, obviously. But getting behind the bar and actually learning the kind of mechanics behind how a bar works and how you can make four different drinks at the same time with just your two hands.
I miss him making four different drinks at one time. I'm just not realizing how much I missed when you were behind a bar in a restaurant.
You want your drink and you want it now,
yeah,
right?
There you go.
So, yeah, okay, so you guys kind of came from those backgrounds. And then what was... when did you two meet? How did you two meet, by the way? I don't know this part of the story.
That's actually a really fun story. Bo is working for a student organization called ISEC, which is a global student-run organization. I think the international president of it is like 26
Two.
Or something.
He's like 22 or 23.
It's like insane. It's all like student-run. It basically involves like going abroad to study and volunteer. So Bo was working a tabling event that was just talking about, hey, do you want to go abroad? And I wanted to go abroad, but I also just like really wanted to go talk to him. And so I went up and talked to him. I went to a meeting about going abroad. And then, I don't know, 2 months later, we were getting on a plane to go to Vietnam together for 3 months. We spent a summer in Southeast Asia together, and we had been dating for...
maybe 2 months at that point. Yeah.
And that will make or break a relationship, right?
Absolutely.
If you go travel with somebody.
Yeah.
I think we actually made it and broke it multiple times in that vacation.
There were several times. And I remember just like biking around Hoi An, Vietnam, and being like, what the hell am I doing here?
What have I done?
Yeah, it was quite an experience, but it all worked out relatively okay.
Here we are. That was 4 years ago.
Yeah, and you're drinking Napa Valley wine here on the radio, so yeah. Something happened, right? And now, Bo, you grew up here, correct?
Well, you're both from New Orleans, actually.
I knew that. That's right. So where did you grow up? Part of town?
I grew up in Metairie, Lakeview. I was in like Bonneville, Metairie area until I was 10, and then I moved to Lakeview when I was 11.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what about you, Matt?
I was in River Ridge and my mom still lives out there. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Not too far.
Yeah. We were talking about this earlier today. I was, Jenna, who was on the show earlier, she's been in New Orleans. This is her second time in New Orleans. And we were talking about this because this did come up at lunch with people. There was the identification of where you went to high school.
Oh, yeah.
And so that, that we had to kind of clarify that for people to let people know that like where you went to high school is one of the key identifiers here. So that's why I asked that question.
Absolutely.
So when you say not too close or not too far, everything is essentially not too far.
Right.
Well, so, and then you guys, at this point then, what was the impetus of the blog? What made you say, we're going to start doing this and stop doing what we were doing before? Did this sort of happen organically? I mean, I know you mentioned that, like, you guys, I know you have some background in media and that sort of thing, but what was there sort of like a click kind of thing where I was like, we're going to start probably this, which I think started as probably that at the beginning, if I remember right.
It was originally probably baking. So
Yeah.
It did kind of happen organically. Bo started the blog off. I mean, Bo's been baking since he was like 11 or 12. He used to bake blueberry pies and go sell them at the farmer's market.
His favorite story for some reason. Yeah. He was making pies when he was 12. I love it. It's great. It's really cute.
And selling them at the farmer's market. Which farmer's market did you sell your blueberry pies?
My aunt was actually, Aunt Renee, who I love very much and has been a huge influence for me food-wise, lives in Covington. So it was the Mandeville like Saturday morning farmer's market.
Probably the Covington farmer's market.
Is it Covington? Yeah, okay. Yeah. I get them a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of that we live over there. It's kind of all the same, but I'm going to guess it's the Covington one because it's kind of the better one. Whatever. Anyway, Sylvia's over here laughing. My lovely wife who is here. Just for the record, the Mandeville Farmers Market really has no food whatsoever. It's people selling like their homemade, like little, you know, walnut boats and things like that.
Okay, it was probably the Covington Farmers Market. There were a lot of brick, like nice brick pilings. It was a very beautiful area.
That's the Covington Farmers Market.
Okay, well, yes. Covington Farmers Market then.
Great. So you're hawking blueberry pies.
Yes. Right.
Okay, so we set the Wayback Machine to then, and so you've been baking until that time.
Yeah, he was kind of, so if I can, I'll just speak for you. He was, I think, feeling a little bit...
He's done well already.
I remember you were in college and you were kind of like, I don't really know like what direction to go. And you hadn't really been baking. You had taken like a long break from baking. And so you just started baking again, but you were also in a photography class that time and you needed something to take pictures of. And so you started taking pictures of the things that you were baking and then... You started putting it online and then writing about it. And then like 6 months later, I wanted to get involved and I started writing about drinks. And so it was more than just baking. So we had to rename it from Properly Baking. And now it's probably this.
Yeah. I mean, we had no clue what we were getting into, honestly. You asked if it was like organic or not. We didn't know what to expect. And it's been an amazing adventure to be able to like live and work from home doing it. So.
Yeah, and we're gonna take a break here because we got to take care of a little business, and that's the part. Since the last time you were on the show with me, I mean, you guys were doing this, but it's transformed entirely since the last time we've talked about this. So let's come back and talk about how it's kind of gone, the wild ride that is probably this. How's that sound? Everybody coming back here to the last half an hour of the NOLA Drinks Show, WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Brian Diaz here with you. Come on back. Oh my.
Do I feel high?
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucouleurs. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers!
The French Market is a place where history is made fresh daily. From the historic Upper Pontalba building on Jackson Square to the ever-evolving Farmers Market, our six-block district celebrates New Orleans food, music, and culture through events, festivals, walking tours, health and fitness classes, and also children's workshops at the New Orleans Jazz Park. Visit our calendar of events at www.frenchmarket.org. The French Market, making history fun since 1791.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Springtime in New Orleans is beckoning us back on our front porches, favorite patio bars and restaurants. Dickie Brennan's Tableau offers some of the best outdoor dining in the French Quarter. Soak in the beautiful weather on the balcony overlooking Jackson Square or by the whispering fountain in the cozy courtyard. Tableau also offers an amazing happy hour from 2 to 6 p.m. every day of the week, offering half-price beer and wine on tap, $5 classic cocktails, and discounted small plates. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Little Big Bad Voodoo Daddy for you there. Yeah, you know, they're a New Orleans band. I don't know if you know that. A lot of people that I talked to didn't know that. You don't really hear too much. They put an album out of Cab Calloway covers not too long ago, which is really fantastic. But anyway, hey, there you go. And we are here, and we're chatting with my good friends, Bo Cialino and Matt Armato from Probably This. And guys, it's good to see you. And actually, I was kind of thinking, Matt, I know we ran into you at Sylvain 3 weeks ago. Bo, was the last time that I saw you at Tales of the Cocktail at that tequila tasting, or have I seen you? Did I bump into you on the street between now and then? I was trying to remember.
I feel like the answer is always maybe.
Maybe. Good answer. I mean, it would be like amazing that we actually ran into each other. But I'm thinking, like, I'm almost certain that we ran into each other like near One Eyed Jack's or something like that.
There's, I couldn't remember if that was before. There's actually a very good chance of that, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And I couldn't remember if that was before Tales of the Cocktail, because we found ourselves, this is the last Tales of the Cocktail, and there was that tequila tasting. I'm forgetting the brand over here in the CBD. Oh,
there's the Casa Noble.
Yeah, the Casa Noble, that's right. Yeah. Exactly. And it was not, and I was thinking, because I hadn't really seen you guys a lot lately. We used to see you all the time, and now I just kind of see you once in a while. Now that you're big and famous with the Probably This blog, I just kind of like if you kind of come into the bar and do the VIP thing, and I get a handshake, and you kind of walk by like when I saw you last time.
No, it's basically because we never get to leave our house because work from home,
and you work from home.
Our work is our home. So we just.
I also think one thing, too, that's so real is like when we were both in service and when Matt was in the service industry, we would go out to eat so much more. And would see so many of folks like you so much more often, but now we like make dinner and are like old men so easily.
And do you, well, and this is a complete tangential question, but it comes up from time to time on the show, like talking to people in the service industry in this case, making sure that you kind of strike that balance between work and life. I typically work out of the home as well for the most part. Do you guys find that? Do you need to make yourself go out and do something else so you're not sort of subsumed by work all the time because it's around you all the time?
Absolutely.
Yeah. In the middle of the day, we have to like, I don't know, like go to the gym or be like, okay, let's pick up this work and go to a coffee shop and finish it there because I'm about to go crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And like even like the neurons don't fire, right? I think creativity can kind of get stunted. And I think you need to kind of like reboot and step away to clear your head to think about what it is that you need to do.
Absolutely. And I think that like one thing too, like leaving the home before noon is super important because if it's suddenly 2, 3, or 4 and you're like, I haven't taken off my pajamas or haven't gone out of the door.
Taken a shower.
Or like, I don't know what temperature it is outside. And being New Orleans, it could be like 30 degrees or 80 degrees in January. So
Right. You don't just like Google the weather and then look outside and go, okay. they're vitamin D from the sun is good.
Yeah. Usually.
Usually. Right. So, working at home, I think it's a really interesting concept. And then you guys are doing what you're doing. So when you, we're talking about, you know, doing food stuff, doing lifestyle stuff, all this sort of thing, cocktail stuff. So you're shooting the photographs at home, you're crafting the stuff at home. So you've worked to create a nice space at home to present this stuff.
Yeah. And I think we've finally gotten to a place in the last few months where we're really like, okay, this is a definite home. You know, for a while we weren't sure if we were staying in New Orleans, and we've kind of decided about 3 or 4 months ago that we're definitely doing it. So now we've taken the extra effort to really make our house like a true home. And it's been so much more comfortable to live in.
What neighborhood do y'all live in, actually?
We live in the Bywater.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now when you started this, and so I think we kind of got the story a little bit about more or less starting organically and kind of figuring this out. Since the last time that you guys were on the show with me, you know, you were doing this and it was going really well. I think, Matt, you were still actually working at Cavan maybe or something.
I was, yes. I think it was about a year ago we were on the show last. I've only been full-time working on our business for about 6 months.
Okay, yeah. So now, was this something that kind of caught you all by surprise? I mean, that it totally took off? And because you guys have an audience everywhere. I mean, I see what, obviously subscribe to what y'all do and things like that. And it's kind of, I mean, really in the past, 6-8 months, if that's a fair way to put it, it's blown up in a sense.
I think a part of it has been, yeah, part of it's been a big surprise. And also I think it was like super, at the time, honestly, like really a big risk and trust and faith for Matt to quit his full-time job and jump into it. And that what is funny is that also is what propelled it and propelled us. It was having people putting, you know, a full work week into it really did make it go from a side hobby for both of us really to being a full-time job.
Well, that brings up something interesting, Bo, that I think, let me ask you guys this question. I think, you know, I hear from a lot of people, and contrary to what people may listen to out here, yeah, so I'm sort of a clown on the radio, and it's like not that hard to do, and it's not. But you have to put in these things that I think behind the scenes that people don't necessarily understand. So, you know, think, oh, I know something about food, or I know something about drink, or I can take a picture. Oh, I can do that. And it's not that simple, right? I mean, there's a huge amount of legwork that actually has to go into this from behind the scenes.
There are plenty of things.
I don't want to oversell it.
I'm not saying that we're like super ultra talented or anything, but like we don't have any employees. It's just Bo and I. We do all of our accounting. We don't have an agent, so we are communicating with all
the emails. If anyone wants a free assistant job, we can't pay you, but we'll give you brownies. We'll answer emails.
Occasional we'll cocktail. Give them occasional cocktail and brownie.
And like the dishes too.
Oh my God.
There are days when we're working on, I mean, recently we've had 10 recipe days sometimes because we've tried to consolidate and like more, like plan out more to just like be better with our time. So we're like, okay, this is our cooking day. And we make 10 recipes and then we'll like shoot it the next day. But 10 recipes is a lot of dishes.
That's a ton. And I mean, go on, Bill. I'm sorry.
No. It I think caught us off guard by how poor we are at managing our dishware use. So
yeah, well, I mean, you especially, you'll whatever. Use like a knife to cut butter and throw it away. And then like another knife to cut the same stick of butter.
Yeah, see, now I wasn't expecting it to go exactly this way, but here's what I'm talking about. You know, sort of the word to the wise. If you think that you can start a food, drink, lifestyle blog, do dishes.
Yeah.
Dishes. I mean, you can generate lots and lots of dishes. And so when you guys do, say, like a 10 recipe day, and I think this is sort of what I'm getting at, is that people maybe don't, there's the admin part, right? There's the photography and capturing this part, doing that well. There's the creative part where you're doing the recipes, you're doing the cooking, all this kind of stuff. And anybody out there may go, well, that one part doesn't sound that hard, but when you put it together, that's a lot of legwork.
Yeah, it is. And I don't think and it's kind of one of those things where it doesn't really ever stop because it's when you have a lifestyle blog or a food blog, you're just kind of doing it.
You're
all
always
the time.
Living your life. You're always eating.
Yeah. Right. And so it's kind of like, I don't know if we put in 40 hours a week each or if we put in 90 or 100, you know what I mean?
It's not really clear what's work and what's not.
Yeah. Which is, maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Well, when you guys do say, let's go to the creative side. When you guys do the recipe stuff and things like that, seeking inspiration from all kinds of different things. I mean, what inspires the creative process? I mean, you guys are doing your own stuff, right? So, I mean, this is not like, I'm not saying that things don't exist in a vacuum, but you guys are doing your own things. It's not like you're taking somebody's recipe from a cookbook and making it and taking a picture of it. You're doing the creative side as well.
Right. Well, sometimes we will, our like food blog friends, if someone we know puts out a cookbook or something, they'll maybe like send us out advanced copies and we'll, do one of their recipes from the book. We'll redo other people's recipes from time to time, obviously with credit. But a lot of the time lately, we've been trying to do just really simple things. I've been doing, I think we have like a gumbo recipe up there right now, which was, I just like took my great grandmother's gumbo recipe from like this really old family cookbook. And I was just like, let's make this and like, let's put that on there.
You did it. You did. So yeah, great grandmother, right?
My great grandmother's recipe. Yeah.
She had an amazing book out, but he like kind of altered her gumbo recipe to be a turkey andouille gumbo. For like Thanksgiving was what we did it for.
Okay.
And it was like
Easter leftovers.
Such a great way to use Thanksgiving leftovers. So really getting back to that is a lot of it's so seasonal. I mean, we're not like super harking on like, okay, we're fully seasonal. Everything we're doing is seasonal. But in reality, like we typically eat pretty seasonal. And if there's a holiday or if it's spring or if it's, you know, winter, we really try and use the vegetables we have access to and get inspiration from that most of the time.
Mm-hmm. And then drawing what you're both from here. So drawing from the season, the cultural components of the season. So we're talking about gumbo, things like that. You said something too, Matt, that I think is interesting. And I've heard it actually three times today, strangely enough. Simple, 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 simple. And there seems to be a little bit of, I think, kind of nicely, a little bit of a return to that. And I don't necessarily know that we here in New Orleans have ever gotten entirely away from that. But even some of the things at Kenton's that we were eating today, and Jenna, who was on the show before, had dinner at Cavan last night, not making things overly complex and just sort of taking simple dishes and doing them really well. I think maybe that got lost a little bit in the shuffle, and not necessarily here in town, but in the grand scheme of things. Are you guys kind of seeing that, or does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, sorry, you can go ahead.
I was also going to say, yeah.
I think right that on. There was like I was listening to some or reading some, I think it was, might have been Eat or Nola article about restaurant renaissance in New Orleans, but also in general around the country, maybe around the world, I don't really know. But there was such a period. I mean, we all remember the great foam era of like the early mid 2000s where everything had a gas streaker of foam and like even not super fancy places were doing that just kind of for fun. And I think that lately, I've been noticing a lot more, like you're saying, people are just returning to the ingredients. If you're going to spend $25 on a dish, why not just have it be an amazing, you know, piece of meat or a piece of really good fish? Or
I don't need it deconstructed. It can be constructed.
Yeah, it can be constructed. yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and the sort of micro gastronomy thing and things like, and it's interesting.
But I think it kind of had its heyday. And I think while it's still amazing and when it's done right, it's amazing. But I think people are not necessarily, that's no longer like the standard you're aiming for.
Right. Yeah, I think so. And I think that makes sense.
It definitely has its place, but that place isn't necessarily like everywhere.
Every day. Yeah, every day for like a $40 a plate kind of thing. And seeing my things sort of smeared across the plate and all these things that I think I can just like stir it up like a mashed potato, which I think I'm not supposed to do. Or am I supposed to do that? I shouldn't make fun. Anyway, you guys, what we're going to do is we're going to take a little break here on the show and then come back. And we kind of started talking about seasonal stuff. Some of the intention was to talk about that. And we'll do that here in the last segment of the show. And we're going to taste a little cocktail that these guys have whipped up for us. And it will be just right for the season. Friends, come on back to the show.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar, located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Rum is the chosen spirit of Palace Cafe's Black Duck Bar and features an extensive rum collection from all over the world. Be sure to join us for happy hour Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m., with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine. Look forward to seeing you soon at Palace Cafe's new Black Duck Bar.
flowers in the rear. Tell me who drank my beer.
All right, everybody. Little Dave Bartholomew for you coming on back. Who drank my beer while I was in the rear? You should know that one, too, if you don't know who Dave Bartholomew is. Think Fats Domino. Check it out. Another thing, Google. I've told people to Google like five things today that I just can't explain. You should just know. We're chatting here with Matt Armato, Bo Cialino from Probably This. And we were meant to talk about like seasonal cocktails and things like that, but this is how the show works. We just sort of go where it goes. We drank wine. We did this stuff. But you guys did actually deliver on a promise and made a lovely cocktail that I think probably tastes great right now this time of year. What'd you do, Matt?
Yeah, so this is an Herb Saint Snowball. Essentially, like I was telling you, this is kind of the liquefied form. I didn't think it was going to take the or survive the trip into the station. But this is just the liquid form, and it's a super simple kind of calling back to two New Orleans favorites, Herb Saint and Snowballs.
Snowballs, I like it. Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's got a nice, like, anise flavor, very syrupy sweet, like a Snowball should be.
Yeah, and you know, you said, and Bo, you said this too, like during the break, that the nice sweetness cuts the very strong anise note on the Herb Saint.
Absolutely. Yeah, I embarrassingly enough, am not super into Herb Saint and have always had to have a bad reaction to it. But when this is frozen and has the whole shaved ice thing going on, it's like amazing.
And I can get how the frozen part when you do this as a snowball is going to kind of even cut the syrupy, obviously cut the syrupy nature of this right. A little bit further.
For sure.
And since I think it's very seasonally appropriate, and if you're listening to like the podcast, for example, and you're thinking, why are they talking about drinking alcohol snowballs in the middle of January?
Well
friends, it's 75 degrees outside
really
here
hot.
In New Orleans.
Yeah, it's really
I know.
Hot.
Well, that's the other funny thing you mentioned earlier about the seasonality of what we do. And it's kind of funny because we often forget the rest of the country who maybe is looking at the blog. I mean, most of our audience is not from New Orleans, actually. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think people are confused to see us using the things that we're using when we're using them, or, you know, it's just, or making, you know, things that are totally meant for summer in the middle of winter, like a snowball. They don't really quite get it, but.
Yeah. I mean, it makes all the sense in the world. And I think we were, you know, was talking about this before y'all got here with Jenna. You know, we drink, for example, I mean, just simply, we drink rosé year round here because it goes with the food.
Yeah,
right. And these sorts of things when you have this unexpected balmy stretch of 3 or so weeks minus a couple spots of where it's been 75 degrees and warm outside. And these flavors are really nice to have And we drink Herb Saint and these sorts of things and absinthe and things like that all year round.
Yeah, absolutely. And coming up with recipes for like what we do, I think Bo in particular gets really excited when autumn starts rolling around because he's really into those kind of like richer, like those whiskey and brandy cocktails. And so we start gearing up, getting ready to like get inspired for those types of recipes. And then it really just didn't happen this year because it never really got cold.
I feel cheated. I said that earlier and I still feel cheated. And I want winter and I'm not getting winter either.
Yeah,
but
yeah. Absolutely. I also think that something like this, I mean, while it's a great snowball, if it was a little bit less sweet, even like the frozen way it was, would be so good as like a granita on top of an oyster or something.
Oh,
like,
yeah, that's a great idea.
That is one trend that I am fully about. The granita raw oysters, I am all about it.
Yeah, so tell people what that is and how you go about it then. I think that's really worth explaining.
Sure. So actually, I have to give credit to Susan Manick, who has worked at Gautreaux's and has, you know, been all over the city doing amazing things. She introduced me to the granita on the raw oyster thing at Ivy, which was a restaurant a few years ago. And it's kind of just like a frozen, almost like a frozen mignonette. Often there's vinegar in it. But you'll see things like Herb Saint and other liqueurs working their way into these sometimes. And you just kind of grate this frozen mixture. There's often lemon juice and vinegar and other flavors you want to add and spices. And then it just kind of gets plopped on top of a raw oyster. And there's a consistency of like a snowball, but it's on top of an oyster and you kind of just slip it all down together and it's delicious. I mean,
so good.
So good.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. And since the oysters obviously raw are sitting in ice and stuff like that it's going to maintain that cool component, right?
Well, absolutely. Yeah.
That's pretty neat. Do you guys want to do, we got about 3-5 minutes here. Do you guys want to do the flip since we're talking about it?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, cool. So we're going to do a little midstream show pour thing here. And so, tell us, Bo, while Matt pulls this out a little bit about the flip that y'all did.
Yeah, sure. So this is a chartreuse flip, and there's a few things that I hated this cocktail for so long because I actually had a huge problem with an egg being in my cocktail. But a flip means the whole egg is in the cocktail and gets shaken, and it's what gives it that frothy consistency. It makes it so velvety smooth. And for a while, that really freaked me out. But I'm into it now. And then chartreuse was the other thing that kind of threw me off. It's an obscure liqueur. It's got a ton of spices. I think that the original recipe is actually created by some French monks or something. Maybe I'm...
Yeah, absolutely. It's an old, more or less sort of like an Amaro from a French monk. Several, like 34, 35 herbal stuff in it. Yep,
exactly. Yeah, so it has this like beautiful, warm, herbaceous quality to it. And mixed with this like creamy, frothy, velvety texture from the egg. It just has this... I mean, it's so warming in a way. It's just delicious.
You know, what I really like about it, just on first sip, and exactly as you said, Bo, this is a hell of a brunch drink.
Yeah.
And especially like this time of year where it's not super hot and it's not super cold. Because actually what's kind of popping out because chartreuse has a lot of herbal notes to it, as we know, and as we're talking about here, and I was not articulating it very well, but the citrus note in all of this actually shines through really nicely. So to me, I get a sort of lemon note on this, plus the herbal notes of the chartreuse, and then the consistency of the flip from the egg. I think this is like a perfect sort of Eggs Benedict type brunch drink, if that makes sense.
Wow, yeah, that sounds really like a really great pairing. And there's some lemon juice in here as well. And then the one thing that you didn't mention is there's some creme de cacao in it, actually. I think gives it that little richness.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you guys use the Tempest Fugit creme de cacao or?
Not today.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Because, you know, and I think that's a really cool thing when you use creme de cacao, because it actually kind of, like you said, adds a little richness, like quarter ounce kind of thing in a drink, just kind of adds some body and some curve to the drink.
Yeah, actually, absolutely.
If that makes sense. Well, you guys do me a favor, because we do have about a minute left now on the show. Beautiful flip. Tell people where they can. Oh, absolutely. Tell people where they can find you online, like how to connect with Probably This.
You can find us at probablythis.com.
It's amazing how that works.
Or on Instagram at probablythis.
Yeah. Or anything is at probablythis, really. Facebook and Twitter as well.
all the ones. So just look for Probably This. Friends, it's a really cool blog. They do really cool stuff. Great recipes, great drinks, lifestyle stuff. Incredibly creative, incredibly well presented. Matt, Bo, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. It's great to see you guys again, great as always. Thank you. Friends, come on back to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Come on back to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show with Tim McNally tomorrow during this time slot. Come on back to the NOLA Drinks Show next Thursday. Have a good show lined up for you next week. Hey, we'll talk about it a little more. Check us out on social media, NOLA Drinks. Until next week, cheers, y'all.